Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
NBNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on a beautiful day. I mean, it is just perfect today. This is one of those days that I could stand this every day of the year. I mean, temperature is in the 60s. There's no humidity. There's no pollen.
Unfortunately, you're not going to get
this happens maybe a dozen times a year. It's beautiful.
But for our non-local listeners, it is, or maybe for folks who've been cooped up all day, it is. Yeah, it's just perfect outside. This is a tourism board. Day in the Auburn Opelika area, and appropriately enough, there will be a little bit of baseball tonight. And this is the exact kind of weather,
great weather for baseball
that Butch is hoping for.
Really is. Auburn wrapping up its season opening homestand tonight against the Samford Bulldogs. A 6 o'clock first pitch over at Samford Stadium, Hitchcock Field at Plainsman Park, and we're going to be talking here momentarily to the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, who will be there on the play-by-play. He and Brad Law will have it, I believe, this evening for tonight. We'll find out who's going on the mound. Auburn coming off a weekend sweep of Wright State, where they run-ruled Wright State on Friday and Saturday, 11-0 and 11-1, and then won the final game decisively, 9-4. So Auburn off to a good start baseball-wise. We'll also talk with the voice of the Tigers about Auburn basketball. The Tigers heading into their final four games of the regular season with a two-game lead in the Southeastern Conference regular season race over Florida and Alabama. And they'll host the Ole Miss Rebels tomorrow night. And that also is a 6 o'clock start, that one at Neville Arena. So with that, let's jump right to the Drive hotline and welcome in the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham. Hey, Andy, how you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. It is an absolute perfect day for baseball at Plainsman Park. It is absolutely gorgeous at Plainsman Park today.
Yes, we were talking about that at the beginning. Couldn't ask for better. I said I could take weather like this 365 days of the year. It is mm-hmm. absolutely beautiful. And you're right, a perfect night. Hopefully a good crowd as Auburn wrapping up its season opening homestand against Samford tonight.
This is a day where the Drive needs to be either out on the War Eagle Wall or out in the Cakewalk.
You're right. You're absolutely right. We should have been. Oh man, this would be a great day. War Eagle Wall might be a little tough sun wise later on.
We got some people listening. We could maybe have that in the works for a midday coming up pretty soon. But you're right.
You and I have done that in the past, Bill. We used to do the show out in Wright Field.
Yeah, that's right. Wright Field's a little different than left, though, Andy. I can see Dan and me talking along. And somebody crunches one, and we can't see it in the sun. So that could be a lot of fun.
In that day, there was no option in left field.
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right. There was the power plant was out in left field.
Andy, what's your sense of how the stadium improvements have gone over? You know, being able to be there for these games so far this season, and seeing how folks have reacted. Like, is there a consensus so far, and if so, what do you think?
No, I think the consensus is that folks have enjoyed the additions and the enhancements to Plainsman Park. Plus, I think the weather has affected the crowds the last couple of weeks. But I mean, we saw a record crowd on opening day 2 weeks ago, and we saw a record crowd for a series 2 weeks ago, a weekend series. Weather was not terrific last week. I think tonight we will see the Broadway Club to my left packed. I think we will see the War Eagle Wall. I think we'll see the back 40 out there in right center packed. I think we'll see the K Corner packed. I have not been in the 984 Club, but one of the things I noticed about Sunday, even with weather that was cool and cloudy all day long, is that the seats outside in front of the 984 Club seem to be packed. Folks are still obviously coming in and taking part of the brand new Tiger Terrace on that lower level, where they can grill and there's some premium seating there. Folks seem to be enjoying themselves up on the parking deck as well. I know that's not an enhancement, but and then, you know, I mean, it's all almost old school now, but I think folks really enjoy the time that they get in the Hall of Fame Club down below the ballpark and those first couple of rows of seats immediately behind home plate. I think Auburn should be proud of the work that they finally did at Plainsman Park. It's been long overdue, but this is one of the premier baseball facilities, again, in the Southeastern Conference and in the country, in my estimation.
Andy, I have heard quite a few folks that really enjoy the space that there is down there, the concourse area, as you as you walk down the first base line. There's just so much more room for folks, even that have their seats, to be able to go either get out of the sun or just be able to go grab something and sit there and be still able to watch the game. And you've got so many more monitors around the stadium now where you never really lose touch, no matter where you are, of what's going on.
You know, the first place, Bill, that we saw that was building brand-new ballparks was at Arkansas several years ago. And even when you went to get a hot dog or some ice cream or a beverage, you could still turn around and watch the ball game. You never had to miss a play in the ball game. And I think that's, and a lot of folks now have gone to that. I think it's a great idea. And especially down that first base line underneath the 984 club.
Yeah.
And this is accessible to everybody. Mm-hmm. You can go down and as you mentioned, get out of the sunshine or perhaps out of the weather. But you can grab yourself something to eat, and you're not missing any of the ball game. And I think that's a great idea that they've adopted here at Plainsman Park as well. I think it's a great idea, and they've carried it out.
And that's when the media got their tour. That's what really struck me is how much space, how much larger everything, the entire ballpark seems to be because of the open concourses and the areas that there are for people to get around. You're never in a bottleneck.
No, and there's just a different presence in this ballpark now. Just that 984 club alone down the right field line. I mean, just as you drive past it on Donahue, and imagine what that's going to be like during football season coming up, where folks are up in the 984 club and they're looking over Tiger Walk now. I mean, this is surely a multi-purpose facility, and we're going to see the same thing when all said and done in the north end zone at Jordan-Hare Stadium as well. I mean, that is going to be not just for football Saturdays. I think we'll see football Friday nights. I think we will see events in there all year long. So I think it's a great idea, and I can't wait. John Cohen is going to be on the Talking Tigers podcast. We're going to tape later this week with the Auburn's athletic director. It will go out Monday. I'm going to try and get into, you know, give me an insight into what that brand new north end zone is going to be like. I don't know if he can tell me anything, but I'm certainly going to ask that. But I do think we're going to see that. And I think not only, Bill, I won't be at all surprised if there isn't some academic side.
Oh, yes.
To that.
There definitely
end zone
is.
As well, from what I'm gathering.
Well, that's I bumped into a couple of folks that I used to work with in engineering, and saw Dr. Roberts too, and they were excited about how that is going to benefit the entire university.
Well, when Auburn played at Texas this year, there was a group of folks, including Dr. Roberts, including John Cohen, including the president of the Board of Trustees, Quentin Riggins, and others, that made that trip to Austin, and they toured similar facilities at TCU, Texas A&M, and Texas. So they are getting ideas from other facilities, two of which now that are in the Southeastern Conference, of just what those facilities are for those universities and what those that facility can be at Auburn. So I think they're doing their due diligence. Obviously, budget will play a major part of this. Moving forward, but I think that north end zone is going to be something that we can all be very, very proud of.
Oh, and you said John Cohen on talking on the podcast this week.
It'll be next.
He and I are sitting
Monday.
Down Thursday morning to record. Monday morning, that podcast will go out, and facilities will be a part of that. I want to talk a lot about NIL. and what that means at Auburn. And that big payment that's coming, how that's going to affect Auburn Athletics. So there will be a wide range of topics with John as we sit down Thursday morning to record.
Yeah, really, really looking forward to that one. Let's talk a little baseball. Yeah. Auburn off to a really good start. Butch didn't seem thrilled after the first weekend about the bats, but they were much improved against Wright State. I really like the makeup of this team. I mean, it's got some really talented, proven vets and some really exciting newcomers to the lineup. And then we've seen a pretty good display from the arms. A lot of new faces out there on the mound.
I think there's a lot to be encouraged by after just the second weekend of play, and I think the head coach felt better about the second week than he did the first. And in that first, they just lost the one ball game on Saturday. But I think he liked the improvement that his team showed, not only at the plate, not only on the mound, but defensively as well. I think Auburn hit a team leading or an SEC leading 361 last week, had an earned run average of 2.84, and fielded at 988 in its games last weekend. You're going to win a lot of ball games if you continue those kind of numbers. Now, granted, the competition is going to pick up immensely with this game tonight against Samford, and certainly this weekend with Ohio State and Oregon State and Baylor as they get to play down at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. So I think we'll learn a lot more about this team this week. But I thought it was an encouraging week for Auburn baseball, and much like what we have seen from Auburn basketball this year, it's not just one or two guys. I mean, we saw it from true freshmen. We saw it from the veterans that you want to see it from. We saw it from some of the newcomers that are in Auburn uniforms, and not just at the plate, but on the mound as well. And another guy that I didn't get a chance to see last week because Auburn basketball was playing, I'm looking forward to watching Andreas Alvarez pitch tonight, because he gave up a hit and a home run in the first two batters that he faced last week against North Alabama, and then was lights out the rest of the way, had nine strikeouts. It's Auburn's first freshman. It's the most strikeouts by a freshman since Keegan Thompson had 10 in his freshman season. So I look forward to watching Andreas Alvarez pitch tonight against Samford Ball Club. Bill, and you know this, Dan, as well, I'm not sure there's an in-state school that has done more damage at Plainsman Park over the years than the Samford Bulldogs.
No, you're right.
They have never come in here ever afraid about playing the Auburn Tigers, and have had as much success as anybody, especially in the midweek games from the in-state school. So I look forward to watching Alvarez tonight against the Samford Ball Club, and then Auburn will get up, and Thursday morning they head down to Arlington, Texas.
Casey Dunn was at Samford for a while. He's UAB now, right?
Right.
But he was there.
Yeah, no, you know, Tim Parrington was there for a long time. Casey Dunn was there for quite a long time, and both of those head coaches were very successful, and Casey is doing great work at UAB as well. I mean, I think they swept South Alabama this past weekend, and Auburn will play UAB here, and then of course we'll play up at Regents Field in Birmingham a little bit later in the season.
Looking forward to that one tonight. Again, it should be a great night to be at the park. And hey, you know, as if folks needed any more incentive, they've got the weekday deals with $2 hot dogs $5 16-ounce adult beverages. Yes.
Hey, now.
Yeah, 16-ounce cold snacks. I don't take part in that while I'm working a ball game. That's a scary thought. So, but yes, that is something that we can all come out and enjoy on these midweek games, and not just here, guys, but at the J.B. Moore Field when Auburn resumes its midweek games for softball as well.
Yep. Let's talk a little. Round ball as the Tigers heading down the stretch. Four games to go, and the first one, the Ole Miss Rebels tomorrow night. Tigers with a 2-game lead now in the SEC as they look to wrap up the SEC regular season title.
Andy, I thought it was a really impressive pair of victories this past week. Maybe they're not the first games that folks are going to come, you know, that they're going to think of if Auburn wins the SEC regular season title. But to hold off a pair of teams that needed that win to improve their position. You know, Arkansas is still looking like a tournament team anyway, but that win would have helped them a lot. And then for Georgia,
they sure did Saturday when they beat Missouri.
They sure did. And if Georgia misses the tournament, they could be looking at they could be looking at that Auburn game as, you know, both Auburn games as missed right. opportunities because Auburn had answers.
Folks have been surprised that Auburn hasn't just gone out and blown out opponents when it's come to Southeastern Conference play, and especially games at Neville Arena. I just want to remind you that right now Auburn is 13-1 in the best conference in the country and one of the best conferences ever in college basketball yep. right now. And if you think you're going to go in and you're going to beat a team by 20 just because you're the number one team in that conference, think again. And there have been some ball games where Auburn hasn't played its best. And yet, you know, you look at that Georgia game and you get Jani Broome back, and he played like the National Player of the Year on Saturday, in spite of what the rest of the ESPN says these days, 31 points and 14 rebounds and 4 assists and 2 blocks. But, you know, you still win that game by 12. You're beating teams that are playing in the best conference in the country by far, and maybe one of the greatest conferences we've ever seen in college basketball, and yet this Auburn ball club is 13-1 with 4 games left in the Southeastern Conference.
Andy, you mentioned Jani, and I thought he just looked like he had a little more yeah. bounce. He looked quicker than he had, and he said as much after the game that he's feeling closer to 100%.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what he said to the rest of the media, but he mentioned it to us on the Auburn Sports Network, and he looked like it, you know. And let me say this: he has done a ton of work. You know, I mean, he suffered that injured shoulder in the Georgia State game back in December, and never missed a game, which was remarkable. He came out of that game at South Carolina in the second half, about 6 minutes into the second half, and it looked scary. And I think he was scared when that injury occurred. You just look at his face. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he was on the bench at the end of that ball game when that Auburn team ended up gutting one out and winning that game on the road in South Carolina, winning it. And then, you know, he misses 2 ball games. But, man, he was in that – he was in the training room at all manners of day and night, working with Auburn's athletic trainers and team doctors and the strength and conditioning folks. And they did a lot of work, but so did Jani. And he came back and played on an injured ankle. And at times it looked like he had an injured ankle. And yet, look at the numbers that he has put up with the double-double game in and game out. And then the one game this past Saturday where it looked like kind of like the Jani that we saw until that injury at South Carolina. And what does he do? 31, 14, 4, and 2. And that's a monster, monster game for Jani Broome this past Saturday. I look forward to that if he's got that step back, what he does for these last 4 games of the regular season and beyond. And I guarantee you they will continue to work on that ankle until the last second of his time at Auburn and probably after that to get him ready for the NBA as well.
Andy, Bruce said something really interesting today when he was talking about the shot selection. You know, sort of he thought that I'm paraphrasing, but it's almost as though because Auburn has missed some early, you feel like guys are pressing and they're taking more difficult shots because they really want to spark a run and they really want to see one go in. And he said something along the lines of he wants to see the easy ones go in, and then you can start trying to ratchet up the difficulty a little bit. Have you gotten that sense that maybe, you know, the guys are pressing to try to make some of the threes, because they haven't had the success they had earlier in the season from deep?
I mean, listen, I mean, you're getting down the stretch. You're trying to win a Southeastern Conference championship, which, you know, even though we've seen it a couple times in recent memory, that it's not this is not still normal for Auburn basketball. They have been number one longer than any other school in the SEC ever other than Kentucky.
Right, wow.
And they've got 2 losses on the season. One of those being in the Southeastern Conference to Florida, which is going to be a number one seed, and the other one to Duke, which is going to be a number one seed. You know, you're getting it. It's the grind of the season right now. And sometimes it doesn't fall for you. And yet this team, he has done a masterful job as the head coach of the Auburn Tigers. And he should be the SEC Coach of the Year. He should be the National Coach of the Year. To me, that's a no-brainer with what he has done this season in Bruce Pearl.
Yeah, I'm not going to. Can't argue with that.
I agree with you, Andy. And that's saying something considering what's happening at Missouri, right? Considering there's a Missouri.
There are some great coaching jobs that are happening across this country, at Houston and St. John's and Duke and at Missouri. I mean, all over. But I think this is the best one that we're seeing out there in Bruce Pearl. He gives his team freedom to shoot the three. He always has, ever since I've been doing the ball games. He certainly did before that with that bunch that featured, Harper and Bryce Brown. I mean, how many times did you think Austin Watt is going to shoot a three, or Walker Kessler, or Jani Broome? And look what Jani's doing. I mean, he had two huge threes at the beginning of that ball game the other day. So, I think it's almost natural to see a team press a little bit as you get down the stretch. And you've got a two-game lead on two other teams that are likely to be number one seeds in the NCAA. I mean, three of the four number one seeds in the NCAA tournament are Auburn, Florida, and Alabama. The only other one is Duke out of the ACC. So I can see why a team might be pressing a little bit at this point. But I don't think they're going to change. I don't think they're going to change their philosophy at this point. But what you would like to see of Miles Kelly when he gets an open three, knock it down, just because that's what he does. Or Denver Jones, or Chad Baker-Mazzara, or Tahad Pettiford coming off the bench. I think at times we forget that young man is a true freshman after the games that he has had and the pressure-packed situations he has come through in this season. So, four games left, two games at Neville Arena. Tonight or tomorrow night against Ole Miss, and of course the closer against Alabama, and who knows what will be at stake when Alabama comes to town a week and a half from now. It has been a remarkable season thus far for Auburn, and there's so much more to achieve with this team right now.
Oh, no question about it. We got a note yesterday. Floyd sent a little note that he was looking on StubHub, and the Auburn-Alabama standing room tickets for the Alabama game at Neville Arena are going for more than Final Four last session tickets.
What a time to be alive and covering Auburn men's basketball.
No question.
It's remarkable. It's absolutely remarkable. And if you're not sitting there and cherishing what this team has done, what this program has become, you're missing a grand opportunity.
Andy, it's always great to be able to spend a little time with you. I let everybody know what all you mentioned, a couple of the things, everything that is on tap there for the Auburn Network.
All right. The Talking Tigers podcast this week features a guy that is literally driving to spring training. He may not be on the road right now, but he is heading to Arizona and Sonny DeShera. Got to talk with him just before he left for spring training in Arizona with the Los Angeles Angels. As mentioned, John Cohen, Auburn's athletic director, this coming Monday to talk all things Auburn athletics. The following Monday, Jeff Grable, Auburn's gymnastics coach, and this was scheduled before that thrilling win at Alabama, historic win for Auburn at Alabama, but we're going to look back 10 years ago at Auburn's Super 6 team, and then that Final Four team, and obviously this team has a lot ahead of it as well. So those are the next couple podcasts coming up that are scheduled. We're working on a couple more at this point that we'll tell you about perhaps in the weeks to come. Baseball tonight on Wings 94.3 starting at 5:45. Mark Fuller joins me on the call tonight from Plainsman Park, Auburn and Sanford. Of course, tomorrow night it's Auburn basketball against Ole Miss at 5:30 as the Tigers and the Rebels do battle at Neville Arena. And Randall Dickey and Jacob Hillman join me on the call Thursday. Tiger Talk at Baumhauer's Victory Grill. We'll have that call for you at 6 as both Jeff Graba and Bruce Pearl join us on the Auburn Sports Network. That comes up on Thursday. Then Friday, of course, Brad will have the call for Auburn baseball against Ohio State, Oregon State, and Baylor this weekend from Globe Life Field down in Arlington, Texas. Also on Saturday, Auburn looks for its first win at Rupp Arena since Bill called John Taylor's buzzer beater in 1988, which is still baffling to me.
Yeah, that's hard to believe.
It's been that long since Auburn won, but this may be as good a chance as Auburn's ever had.
Time to change that, Andy. So bring it, bring it back.
We'll be on the air. That's an early start. It's 11:30 start for us from Rupp Arena on Saturday, and tip off is set for noon. So that's all coming up in the next couple of days on the Auburn Sports Network.
Should be a fun next week as things continue here with spring athletics at Auburn. Andy, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Have a great broadcast this evening.
Bye, Andy.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day. War Eagle.
Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us as he does on Tuesdays here as we open up the drive. And we'll open up the phone lines, 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
So hopefully he's feeling better and back. Dan is, since Dan's gone for the rest of the week, he's run the board the first couple of days.
Although there will not be a show Thursday. I am going to be here Thursday. It's the problem is that we,
we're not on the air.
We're preempted, yeah, because we got women's basketball on ESPN 106.7. But no, I'll be gone tomorrow and Friday to call the last two home games of the season for the Troy women's basketball team before late next week. As we when we head down to Pensacola for the Sun Belt tournament.
Yeah, of course. You were telling us some, and I don't think we talked about it on the air, but I mean,
the goofy bracket that I love.
The Trojans have already got off until the weekend, right?
Yeah, Troy is guaranteed a spot in the top four. Which, and you should pull up the Sun Belt bracket, Bill, if you can. Sun Belt women. I mean, there are people.
Are the men doing the same sort of thing?
Same bracket format. And there are people online who hate it and think that it like makes the regular season irrelevant, which is just the goofiest thing to me because
it doesn't make it irrelevant if you finish in the top four and you get
exactly.
You get
buys. I've seen multiple places where the comments are like, "Well, why even have a regular season if you're gonna?" It's like, what do you mean? Like this is a format that makes if you finish in the top two in the regular season, you go straight to the semifinals. If you finish third or fourth in the regular season, you go straight to the quarterfinals in this format. It makes it very difficult for the teams at the bottom of the draw, but that's how it should be if you want the regular season to matter in your conference tournament. And so, yeah, you look in the
11, 12, 13, and 14 seed would have to win 7 games in 7 days to win the tournament.
Yeah, and the 1 seed would have to do what?
Win twice.
The 1 seed has to win twice. The regular season conference champion.
Or the 2 seed, right?
The 1 seed or the 2 seed.
Just has to win twice.
They go straight to the semifinals. Their first game is Sunday in the semifinals. Their second game, if they win, is the final. I love it.
You love it if your team, if you feel like they're a consistent top four team.
I love it because
you're not going to have to play more than 3 games. You're going to watch everybody else wear themselves out.
How about this? It makes it feel like this.
What's the deepest?
This is the first year. This is the first year of this format.
It is going to be crazy to see how deep a team can go. How many games can a team win without winning a conference tournament?
Last year, I think they took the top four went straight to the quarterfinals. That was the format they used. Sort of similar deal last year, but I think they had fewer days, and so it was 1, 2, 3, and 4 were immediately in the quarterfinals, but there were no byes after that. The putting 1 and 2 in the semifinals is a new is a new wrinkle, and I think it just makes it adds value to the 2-month-long regular season we've just watched because it rewards the teams at the top. The teams that finish the best in that get to go straight to the they get an incredibly favorable draw.
Yeah, no kidding. I've never seen anything like that.
No, I know people online have called it like a Mortal Kombat style bracket almost because at the very the teams at the very bottom have to just. I mean, they have to play, like you said, if you're the 14 seed in the Sun Belt and you want to win the conference tournament next week.
Well, if you're the 11 seed, it's like if you're any of the bottom four seeds, it says you have to win 7 games in 7 days.
And especially for a league that maybe is only sending one team to the NCAA tournament and has a vested interest in sending their best team to the NCAA tournament.
So the tournament starts, Tuesday?
Tournament starts Tuesday. Okay. Championship is two
Monday.
Weeks from yesterday. Yeah.
Wow, that is crazy. 334-321-1390. Yeah, we talked about, it seemed crazy when we were talking about some of the possibilities with the new college football playoff, but that's absolutely wild. Are we behind a break
I'll tell you what, we can go to commercial and we'll get to Matt when we come back.
Yeah, let's do that. Matt, hang on. We need to get caught up. You'll be up when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
You can help others in your community.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and let's get to The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Matt is up first. Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. I was wondering if you guys knew why we're starting football spring practice later than usual. Is it so there won't be a break during the
That's part of it.
For spring break?
Yeah, that's part of it. And I think Auburn, as you've seen, multiple schools already decide they're not even going to have spring games. I think Hugh Freeze would just as soon go ahead and have the team work out and not necessarily be doing that spring game type thing. But a big part of it is Auburn's spring break starts on March the 10th, and they wanted to have it after that so that they didn't take a break during practice. It's interesting that they decided to go ahead and just – they're only going to have 3 weeks at 4 days a week. So, you're allowed 15 days of practice, and Auburn's only scheduling 12.
I believe Hugh Freeze also wanted his team to have more time with the winter workout schedule before starting football practice. Mm-hmm. And there was – I know Nathan King had a thing in the last day or so about some updated heights and weights with the Auburn football team. Have you seen that there was I believe the roster's been updated.
Yeah, they haven't added numbers.
But they've changed
some of the sizes.
Yeah, I wonder if wanting the team to be able to have more time in the off-season training program before you start spring practice influenced that decision too.
Well, because you have so many players that enrolled in January. I mean, Auburn's got 35 players that were either signees, freshmen, or transfers that came in January. They'd rather have more time for them to be going through the off-season training program, and they're still able to meet with them and try to learn the playbook, if you will, before they get out there on the practice field. That's one of the things that Coach Freeze mentioned this, and some other coaches, but he really especially said he'd rather have them have more time before they get out there and practice so they know what they're talking about. They know the terminology. They know that type thing. Plus, they have the players in the kind of shape that they want them to be when they go out to start spring.
So the people are not or schools are not having spring games. Is that because, like Nebraska said, there are people that scout their players and then try to scoop them up after that? That seems a little crazy, but
think about it though. I mean, if you have a guy who shows out in a spring game, he may not even be one of your top guys, and in many cases, those are the ones that get more extended exposure in the spring games. Are some of your backups? Some of those guys really stand out. Other schools are definitely going to notice and go, hey, you can get more playing time if you come over here, or we could pay you more, something like that. I mean,
Is there a portal window?
Yes.
Spring that they can be able to transfer and still be able to play in the fall?
Yes, there is. There's a 15-day window in April. Is it the 16th to the 29th or something like that? It's right after the A-Day game is when the portal window is open. And there will be quite a few players. Hey, Auburn would like to – they wouldn't mind shopping in the portal and adding a player or two. I think teams that already feel like they have a pretty solid roster are less excited about that portal window opening.
Well, last question. I'll hang up. Do you guys think the quarterback position is wide open, all guys will get – equal chance, or do you think one or two guys has the leg up?
I think the plan
winter workout.
I mean, I think without discrediting anybody else, I think the plan is for Jackson Arnold to be the guy, right? Like, I mean, it just feels like this is a guy who profiles as a starting quarterback more than anyone else. You know, not writing off the possibility that that Deuce could make a run at it or something like that. But the guy on the team who profiles the most as a starting quarterback for a really good team in 2025 would be Jackson Arnold. If he's not that guy at the moment, I mean, we've said that about quarterbacks in the past, and it hasn't necessarily worked out that way.
That's right.
And the competition's been more open. But I would think that that they didn't bring in Jackson Arnold to do anything but be the starting quarterback for the 2020.
No, I mean, I think that's their expectation, and the fact that they won't have the Cal transfer, Stanford transfer until after spring ball. I mean, you're going to have Deuce Knight and Jackson Arnold are going to be the most experienced guys, plus
Now, look, if Deuce Knight looks like he can play immediately, that's a great problem
to have,
right? Like, it's not, I mean, but I think that the expectation with Jackson Arnold is that he's your guy in 2025, and the hope would be that he looks the part from the first time he goes out there with his teammates.
Yeah. So, that's the expectation. Sure, that doesn't mean that
best laid
Deuce
plans,
Knight
though, right?
Can't win it, or it can't be somebody else. So, appreciate the call, Matt. 334-321-1390. You were, I haven't updated my depth chart. I hadn't seen a lot of tremendous changes in some of the heights and weights.
I think Bobby Jamison's up 15 pounds or so was one of the things that was one of the bigger numbers that I saw.
What is he at now? Because I was confused. I saw one story that had some numbers, and they were the ones that I'd had for a while. So
let me see if I can pull up the article.
Yeah, because I was just looking at that. As a matter of fact, it's funny. I was looking at that just before Matt called in. So I don't know. I think the points we were making there is why they decided to move spring ball.
What did you have Jamison Travis at?
Like 293.
Okay, so he's at 305 right now on the website. Too Tall Miller's up 10 pounds. Blockton's over 300 pounds now.
Keldrick Falk is down 18. Is that right then?
Yes. Reddick is up 7.
Because I was going to say somebody that was one that I saw that one and was like, that's odd because that's a number he was listed at before last season. Then he went from 270 to 288, and now he's listed at 270 again.
Joyner's at 310, so he's down 17, 18 pounds. Braden Joyner would be down mm-hmm. a few pounds. And Deuce Knight is listed at 6'4", 213. I guess that would be the measurable they've updated on him. A couple other, Henderson's 5'9", 194. I don't know. So there's I don't know how earth-shattering any of that is, but it's
okay because I saw a set of numbers and some of them were the same numbers as I'd seen a couple of years before, so Malik Blockton is up 10. Yeah, you're right. Okay, so I was confused as to those numbers. I wondered if they went back to some old ones at some point, but apparently yes. There have been 10, 15-pound changes in quite a few places.
I saw Xavier Chaplin around campus the other day, and uh-huh. I was like, who is that? And he's 6'7", 338. And so it's like, oh, okay, I didn't recognize the 6'8", 350-pound guy. So, but he he's one of the guys that could be competing on that offensive line. Additions on the portal.
He's a guy I think that's expected to, right now, talking about guys expected to be, Jackson Arnold expected to be your quarterback, he's expected to be your left tackle. So we will see. But, yeah, crazy. We're still almost a month away. A month from yesterday is the first day of spring practice, March 24th. 334-321-1390. Bill and Dan here on this Tuesday. Don't forget, coming up at hour number two, Jake Crane of Crane & Company will join us at the bottom of the hour. But until then, phone lines are open, so come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Number one here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Let's see some. We've got SEC basketball, some basketball on tap tonight. Pretty big one.
Florida's playing tonight, right?
Yeah. Let's see. My schedule actually popped up.
Florida, Georgia?
popped up the other days. Yeah, Florida, Georgia is the opening game.
That's at 6.
Yep.
Tennessee's in Baton Rouge.
Really,
that's also
I mean,
at 6.
Yeah. The biggest matchup tonight's in Tuscaloosa. I mean, that's your match, your ranked matchup tonight is Mississippi State at Alabama.
We thought that was tomorrow night. So Auburn. So there is a chance. We were talking about it yesterday. If Florida and Bama both lose tonight, Auburn could clinch a share of the SEC title with a win tomorrow.
That is right.
They'd need
have a 3-game lead over both with 3 games to play.
Now Florida and Bama are both favored tonight. Florida is about a 7-point favorite in Athens. Bama close to a 10-point favorite at home against State. So it's unlikely that you hit the you hit the 2-team parlay of Georgia and State both winning outright tonight. But there is a chance, that Auburn could. I mean, the pressure is, we said yesterday that an Auburn win tomorrow night really puts the pressure on anybody else who wants to win the SEC regular season title.
Right.
I think that a loss by either Florida or Bama tonight really, it's tough to imagine either of those teams losing tonight and winning a share of the SEC regular season title because of what would have to break for them if they were to drop tonight's game.
Yeah, Alabama still has to go to Knoxville and to Auburn as well as hosting Florida.
Right.
Florida's got a much easier road than Alabama does.
Yeah, but a much easier road for Florida still includes
a trip to Alabama
and a visit from A&M.
Right.
Florida's got stuff to figure out too, but they would have to if either team loses tonight, they're in a world of hurt. And if they both lose tonight, then Auburn can clinch a regular season title with a win tomorrow night.
Yeah. So the games tonight, Florida at Georgia. That's 6 o'clock on the SEC Network.
Tennessee's just chugging along, too. Probably not in the cards for the SEC regular season title this year.
No, not with five losses. They're 4 games back with four to play.
I'll tell you what, if Tennessee won out, they would be a fascinating team for the NCAA tournament to figure out. Are they in the mix for one of the 1 seeds? Would they be the best 2
seed? They probably would be. I mean, they'd jump at, I mean, yeah. I mean, they'd be the at worst the third best team in the SEC at worst.
Sure, and I mean, and it's not. I mean, with LSU and South Carolina, or LSU and Ole Miss on the road, Bama and South Carolina at home.
Yeah, so I mean, Alabama is. I mean, they will be solid favorites in 3 of those. I think they'll be favored over Alabama at home.
Yeah, I think all 4 of them.
I think they're solid favorites in the others. You see, LSU, South Carolina, and who was the other one?
Ole Miss in Oxford. I think Tennessee, that's a team where, it's fair to wonder if they have enough offense, and then you see Chaz Lanier go off like that, and you think, oh, they've got enough.
Yeah, when he's scoring,
they've got enough offense. So no, I think that's a team to watch out for. Really impressive win in College Station for them. Over the weekend, want to see what happens. Look, and LSU has a couple of young players that have not packed it in on the season. LSU's still fighting. They should not win tonight against Tennessee.
No,
but they've got a couple of kids that are still playing with pride. I wonder if this is it for Matt McMahon this season, and if LSU makes a change.
Yeah, me too.
Or if they decide to try one more season with that guy. Because if you pay him, if you don't pay him, maybe it's more money you can invest towards. If you don't spend the money on a coaching change, maybe that's more money that you can invest towards
NIL.
Towards trying to give him a better roster to play with. I don't know.
I guess. So that one, and then Alabama, Mississippi State. As I said, though, 3 8 o'clock games tonight in the SEC. Hey,
Hubert Davis getting an extension. By the way, did you see that North Carolina going with the? I mean, I thought he was in.
I did too.
The hot water, but instead they're hiring a GM, longtime NBA agent Ray Tanner, North Carolina alum, and a guy who spent 30 years repping different superstars at the NBA level. He's going to come in and try to be their lead negotiator and their lead man on the personnel front.
They're going with some serious professional folks there in the athletic department, aren't they?
I think that's the direction you think the sport's going.
Maybe
you find people with that kind of expertise.
All right, got a note from our buddy Tex.
You would think NIL's not going to be the problem at North Carolina.
You would think not.
You would think.
Anyway, Tex is back home in Baton Rouge, so he's not able to make it to the ballpark tonight for Auburn and Samford baseball. So if you're interested in a couple of tickets, and he's always interested in somebody who wants to take their youngster to the game. So if you'd like to use those tickets. Let me tell you, those are excellent seats right behind home plate, up on the, you know, on the upper level there behind home plate.
Preferably
great
the
seats.
Preferably the guardian of a child and,
yes,
and a child,
yes.
You know, going
that
to
would
the,
be good, the parent.
Of, yeah.
That would make sense.
Yeah, if you want to open it up to, you know, I'd
yeah,
say
that's
you know,
true.
Parent and guardian, you know.
But
anyone?
I mean, if you'd like those tickets, you can give us a call and we'll put you in touch with Tex. We're coming up on our top of the hour break, just about halfway done here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Again, Jake Crane of Crane & Company will join us at the bottom of hour number two. We had Andy Burcham with us for an extended first segment earlier. Hope you had a chance to catch that. If you missed any of it or any of The Drive, check out the podcast.
That's right. Podcasts of The Drive available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com, use the Podcast Center, or just search for The Drive on your favorite podcasting platform, The Drive with Bill Cameron. And big shout out to our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors for helping sponsor the podcast and the Drive text box.
And so we will be back. We'll open up the phone lines again for the first half hour, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline.
Do want to mention, you know, the Drive hotline presented by Skybar. They'll be open noon Saturday, or they'll be open at 11:45 on Saturday. The parade's going on, the Mardi Gras parade.
That's right.
And the Auburn-Kentucky game. We were just talking about that before the...
Yeah. I mean, the parade will start at about halftime.
So if you're looking for somewhere downtown to maybe watch Auburn-Kentucky so that you can take in both the game and the parade...
Good idea.
Our pals at Skybar will be open. And yeah, they've got the bars open upstairs to check that out. So think about Skybar on Saturday for Auburn, Kentucky, and the Mardi Gras Parade.
All right, we're back with hour number two in just a couple of minutes. Come on in and join us here on The Drive.
Sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan with you here on this gorgeous looking Tuesday afternoon. And we'd love for you to join in. We talked a little. We didn't really talk much Auburn basketball. We talked some baseball and a little Auburn basketball with Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, in hour number one. Took a look at the lineup for tonight in the SEC. Auburn with a two-game lead in the SEC basketball race with four games to go. Meanwhile, Auburn baseball going to be playing over at Sanford Stadium, Hitchcock Field at Plainsman Park, hosting the Sanford Bulldogs. And we have a couple of tickets if someone would like to go. Tex, our good buddy from Baton Rouge, is back home and unable to go. But, of course, these days with digital tickets, that's not a problem if you'd like to go. And, you know, Tex usually likes if you've got a youngster that would like to go to a ball game and the two of you would like to go, just let us know. You can call here 334-321-1390 and we will put you in touch with Tex so he could send you those tickets digitally. That is the phone number to get you through the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390.
Yeah, you can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Hour number two of The Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And we'll go ahead and get to The Drive hotline.
It's our buddy Brett from Beauregard.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. If Auburn goes out and gets a linebacker who's, you know, good enough to start, who do y'all think will be the top two backups at linebacker?
Ooh, in the middle right now. I mean, you look and at inside, one would think that they. Where are they? You want to pull out the Bill Cameron depth chart for this one?
I have to find it on my phone. But, I mean, you've got DeMarcus Riddick, who played some last year, Robert Woodyard, I would think is somebody who is expected to get some playing time. They added, they signed a couple of guys, but as far as experienced guys, if they added, I don't know exactly how the depth chart would line up.
Is DJ Barber in the mix right here? I mean, would.
Yeah, well, DJ Barber is redshirted last year. They signed, they're bringing in Xavier Atkins, transfer from LSU, but he hasn't been a guy that started an awful lot. No, you're right.
Yeah. So really, Woodyard probably played the most, but other than that, I mean, he didn't play that much. But
no, he hasn't. Played better, I thought, last year. DeMarcus Riddick is a guy I think that, everybody's excited to see him out there this spring after a year where, he played a lot on special teams and got a little playing time down the stretch.
Yeah, that's a position, though. I mean, between Keontae – or not, between Eugene Asante and Dorian, right? Like, you got some upperclassmen production at middle linebacker that you're hoping your young guys are ready to step in and shoulder.
Well, they better, but I would think Riddick. I would think he's a lock to be a starter, don't you think?
Yeah, well, you said if Auburn went out and signed a couple of experienced linebackers, who'd be their backups? Because I'm thinking he's probably, expected to be a starter.
I'm thinking Riddick's one of them.
Yeah, I'm thinking Riddick's one of the reasons they haven't gone out and signed a couple of experienced linebackers, right, is belief that they've got a guy in DeMarcus Riddick that can although that's a position – I mean, depending on how the spring shakes out, more than just about anywhere else, where you could see Auburn maybe shopping in the spring portal window to see if they want to.
I think they got to go out and get a starter because I don't think we've got anyone.
That would be where if in the spring the young man from LSU or DJ Barber or even an incoming freshman looks like they could play a lot, maybe that changes like the priorities a little bit. But I think that in general, I think Auburn could be like. You don't know without knowing how spring shakes out. You don't know exactly what Auburn's going to be doing in the portal window, after the spring. But I would think linebacker would be a position where they'd love to add somebody who can give them some quality snaps.
Yeah, I would think defense. Yeah. I would think on the defensive line is another place where you'd be looking for somebody.
Yeah, gotta have another tackle. But hey, the last thing I heard y'all talking about Chaplin. Isn't he supposed to be out during the spring getting his? Going to have his shoulder repaired or whatever.
If that's the case, I must have missed that. I didn't realize that.
I read something on one of the sites where folks said, he'd been hurt last year, a little shoulder injury, but they were saying, now this wasn't a coach or anybody like that, but they were saying that he would probably be out.
Okay, because I was thinking, I remember Mason Miller had also been banged up some last year.
I remember hearing that his season had ended prematurely, right? The Chaplin had maybe had something and I'll check to see the snap count. I don't know if he played in the last couple of games for VT.
I thought he played and did well, but, he was kind of, he's pretty banged up according to what the article I read. But anyway, all right, guys, y'all have a great evening.
Appreciate it, Brett. That's maybe that's the case. I guess it's crazy. I haven't thought that much. Honestly, I haven't been thinking that much about football with basketball going and baseball getting started and start of spring practice so far away.
So checking on Chaplin back when he entered the portal, he played through a shoulder injury for much of last season. I don't know if there's been any talk at Auburn as far as his availability this spring, but the shoulder injury was part of the storyline when he left Virginia Tech. And went into the portal.
Oh, and by the way,
two years of eligibility left for Chaplin.
By the way, you were talking about guys who had changed with the roster sizes being posted. Xavier Chaplin, you mentioned his size a little while ago. When Auburn signed him, they listed him at 323. He's 338 right now.
And there's another. We didn't mention some of the true freshman heights and weights, but the big fella, Bill Jordan Crawford.
Oh, Jordan, yeah. Yeah, he was listed 6'2", 340, and he's still 339, but that 339 is packed on 6 feet instead of 6'2".
And you were talking about Auburn.
Man, what an incredible high school career he had, and then All-Star game as well.
You were talking about Auburn maybe wanting to shop in the defensive line market in the spring portal?
Yeah, I think
We'll see how the young guys look, right? Because that could influence that a little bit too. I mean, Auburn has a couple of guys that played a lot last year in Bobby Jamison Travis and Malik Blockton. After that, I think it's a big bet on younger players, including Jordan Crawford,
I think he's going to get some playing time.
He looks the part.
And, you know, I'm looking at my post-fall depth chart after the signees and everything. And, yeah, I mean, I think we mentioned all the linebackers except the true freshmen, Elijah Melendez, Bryce Diaz, and J.J. Falk. I mean, so, yes, Auburn definitely could use an experienced linebacker.
Yeah, I mean, that's a spot where they, you know, they leaned heavily on upperclassmen last year. They like the youth, they like the depth, but, you know, we'll see if they want to add more.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
It's Pat in Auburn.
Hey guys.
Hey Pat.
And the last caller, he was right. There was a little article about Xavier Chapman said that he had like a small shoulder. There's something they were going to, like, just go in there and fix it small, you know, whatever. They made it sound like it was small, but he would miss spring, but not the fall. I don't know if that's true or not. Like you said, it was
The shoulder injury is definitely legit, right? So, I mean, it wouldn't be all that shocking if he's got to miss some time in the spring, getting it fixed.
Yeah. But the thing I was calling about was, okay, so Dan and I, my brother and I, we were looking over the schedules, and if y'all were talking about like the Tennessee, it looks like they're going to win out. I mean, they got Alabama at home, but that's the one. It's the one game they could lose. If you look at Missouri, it looks like they can win out. They went out, and then you got Florida, who looks like they could win out if they beat Alabama. So if that happens, then Alabama would have six losses. But even if Alabama just lost two and Missouri won one, it puts us in a position to where Alabama could be in the 4 or 5 seed. And if that happens, we play the first game against whoever number 8 or whoever.
Oh, in the SEC tournament, right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because I was I don't know that Alabama's going to fall to a 4 or 5 seed in the NCAA tournament, but –
No. I'm saying a 4 or 5 seed in the SEC tournament. All right. Here's my dilemma. The dilemma I'm talking about is, okay, so we play the first game where we're playing against an number eight seed or whoever they play, eight plays. But then, and they're going to have played a game already, or two. So then we're probably going to win that game. So now we're going into the semifinals playing Alabama. Are we going to, and we play first, you know, so, well, obviously we play first, but I guess the question would be, are we going to, like, we're definitely not going to let Alabama beat us without trying, right?
Oh, no,
you're right.
Oh, I mean, if it's Alabama, right? I mean, there's no, I mean
Janai's going all game, right? Holding back minutes.
Janai would be the one player where I'm really interested to see how Bruce approaches the SEC tournament. Like, I don't expect it to be, like we were saying yesterday, it's not going to be an NFL preseason game where you play the guys for 2 minutes and then the backups go in and you don't really care about the end result.
You're not going to leave it all on the line to beat Alabama?
I could see Janai being the player where they're careful with the minutes. I don't know if I'm going to say they're going to.
Maybe that's the plan.
Right.
But,
exactly. That's exactly. I could see the plan.
I don't think if Alabama's, you know, if Alabama's ahead and you think Janai can be the difference, it's hard not to put him back in.
I can't imagine Bruce losing a game because he's worried about Janai's, load management, right? To anybody, especially Alabama.
And that's my other question is, if you look back on last year, Connecticut, they got the number one pick. They play on Friday. Okay, so you're not. It's not like we had last time where we played Thursday, and then we had to make the road trip out there.
You're probably going to Lexington instead of Spokane, most likely. Which is a huge difference.
And you're playing on Friday, which is you get an extra day. So I guess my question is, as a basketball player, if I play 25 minutes or 23 minutes. Or if I play 20, or if I play 30 minutes, are you really telling me that 6 extra minutes of playing out there, running around for 6 minutes, is really going to make them to where on Friday the next week they just can't play? You know, I just wonder about that.
No.
So the dilemma is, if we're playing Alabama in the semis, Well, then we're probably going to be playing Florida if we try to beat Alabama, which we should. And the last thing we want to do is sit here and watch Alabama and Florida playing in the SEC championship game, and all they talk about is how Alabama and Florida, Alabama and Florida, Alabama and Florida. You know, so I think we have to give it all in that game. And so then now you're playing Florida, and I mean, are you literally going to just not try to beat Florida to win it? To win it. So I feel like we almost might be just forced to just try to win the thing, unless we try to lose the first game, which I don't know why you would want to do that. I mean, you know, just lose to whoever the 18 is.
Although I guess I would say, you know, with the point of Jani's minutes, like, I think Bruce is trying to be careful with Jani's minutes now, right? It's not necessarily like, do you hold Jani out in the final 10 minutes of a close game or something like that? Like, the load management happens. When do you go to... When do you go to rotations with Jani on the bench? Like, how is he moving? Things like that. Like, I could see Bruce being slightly more. And you know what? Maybe not even in the SEC tournament. Like, between now and the NCAA tournament, I could see Auburn being very cautious because they want the best possible Jani Broom in the NCAA tournament. I don't know how much. I don't know how that's going to limit winning and losing games. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's going to be like, oh, well, we got to, because they're still, look, Jani Broom was 7-for-7 in the second half of the Georgia game, right? Like, so whatever they're doing load management wise, it worked Saturday. Like, he didn't miss a shot in the second half.
I almost wonder, like, how much this overrated kind of stuff is, because, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, oh my God, he played 33 minutes or whatever. But, okay, so this guy who's been playing for, what, 12 years or how many ever years he's been playing, you know, is going out and he plays pickup games. They do all kinds. I mean, how I went and used to play pickup games for 2 hours. I didn't do what they're doing. But I feel like we think a minute is, like, this much. But he's going to go, and he's going to be a first-round pick, supposedly. And then next year, this time, he's going to be playing 3 or 4 games a week, playing 35 minutes a game. So,
part of it's what Bruce Pearl asks guys to do, right? Like, 35 minutes in a Bruce Pearl system is usually more grueling than 35 minutes of a less demanding defensive coach. Of a, you know, I that's part of the reason Bruce uses his depth. It's part of the reason Bruce has guys. So I could see, like. And to that point, I thought that Georgia, the way they used their starters, I thought that was part of the reason why they faded in the second half on Saturday. Now, they're also not as good as Auburn, which is probably like...
Right, their other guys aren't either, like, and that's why they used them like that.
But, like, I mean, Georgia's trying to go out there playing two guards 36, 38 minutes a game. Demery's had a couple games this year where he plays 40. And, like, that would make me... As, you know, observing that team, it would make me so nervous because, one, like, what do you do if that guy gets hurt? Suddenly 40 minutes of your backcourt opens up. But also, like, is that guy at his most effective when the game's over?
Or sure, when, but I mean, at the end of a game? Even if you look at Jani, though, I mean, he had 2 weeks off. I mean, yeah, he was injured, so he shouldn't be wore out.
That's a great point. I mean, Jani did miss Jani missed a couple of weeks that he didn't miss last year.
Yeah.
Which
so
could be...
I think it matters when you're playing back-to-back-to-back games. I feel like, I do think there is a definite, like, hey, you might get injured. You know, when you're tired, you get injured, and maybe so. But, I mean, you could get injured on the first play of the game. I mean, you can go, oh, well, you know, Macklemore broke his leg
injured or ejected at the very beginning of the game.
But I really just don't know that I believe that whether a guy plays 30 minutes or 25 minutes, that's really going to help him out too much in five games down the road. You know what I'm saying? I think if we're in the game against Florida and we have a chance to win it, to win the SEC tournament, And it's Jani putting him in there for the last 4 minutes. I just have a hard time believing that
Bruce is gonna go back to, oh, well, hold on, you're at your pitch limit, your pitch count.
Yeah,
you gotta
exactly. It's not like in pitching where your arm, you know, could pull a muscle and you're out. I mean, I think these guys have been running. I mean, they're like the best athletes in the world. So,
I could see an increase in Turtle Hudson minutes between now and the end of the season, if only to try to keep the other three guys fresh. For the NCAAs, you know what I mean? And also, the other reason is that the more Turtle Hudson plays, the better you'll be if you need him in a big moment.
Sure.
Right? Like,
well, Dan, my brother had a good point. He said that what Bruce should do is challenge the backup guys. We're going to play you your minutes in this game, in the first game, and we want you to go out there and just kill it so that way we get a big lead and we can rest Jani and we can rest, you know, Baker. Baker's the one I'm more worried about because his body is a lot, you know, more. You know, malleable.
Fragile.
I feel like he's only 100.
Bruce keeps saying he's 180. I'm not sure that he's 180.
Yeah, well, and the new guy coming in, man, that guy's 165. I mean, good guy. It's like he's on the thin side, but I think we challenge him in the first game to go out there and have the backups just kill it, and then we don't need to play them that much in the first game because we're going against a weaker team and they're tired, and if we can win that game by five or whatever, but only play Janai, 20 minutes, I feel like that would be the way to do it. You know what I'm saying? And then they just got to play the next year. But I'm hoping and praying we just went out because I want this to be the greatest team of all time. That's what I want. I trust that they can do it, and that's what I'm going for. War Eagle guys,
they're on their way. Great call, Pat.
334-321-1390. We'll have one more segment where we can get your calls before we catch up with Jake Crane at the bottom of the hour. So come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Experience enough.
888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Let's get right back to the hotline. And Jeff is up first. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Well, it's such a gorgeous day. I'm out riding out, coming off the freeway here in Montgomery. Oh, my God. What a lovely day.
Oh, yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah, I hope. We have some more of these. But anyway, yesterday, you guys had a couple things going. You were talking about the game over the weekend. I wasn't able to get in Georgia game. I think we've developed the Alabama syndrome where just winning is not good enough. We're these expectations. And what people have to realize, it's a long season. In this conference, and what Auburn is doing, what we're doing, is unprecedented. And to even be where you are is unbelievable. So, and I understand the expectations. People, we're not looking like we're a well-oiled machine, but it's a long season. And Coach BP knows that. So I think everybody just take it for what it is. Yeah, I like to see them play better. But what are we going to do? We're 13-1 in the toughest conference, and I've been watching basketball for many moons. I've never seen anything like this.
No, not in this league. There's no question
it. There have been great teams. There have been teams that have gone on to win the national championship, but you've never seen anything like this, certainly at Auburn, and certainly over. I mean, this is the longest any team has been number one for an extended time, other than Kentucky, ever in the history of this league. I mean, and I thought Andy said it beautifully. This is the kind of season that you bask in, and you certainly don't like it. It would be a dream for this to become the norm, right? Don't expect it. Like it's just because nobody's been able to enjoy an extended run like this. In the history of the sport. So it's been at times tough to wrap your head around.
Oh yeah. Well, if you go back to media days and even some of the other procrastinators leading up, they said somewhere around 13-5 would win this conference. By golly, we way surpassed that. So this is unprecedented. So people need to understand, we're on a run that no one saw this coming. No one.
I mean, I think there were people who thought Auburn could be pretty good, right? I think there were people who thought Auburn could be
13-1 good.
I think there are people who thought Auburn could be the best team in the SEC this year. Auburn and Alabama looked like they were going to be, but to say, yeah, I think that even with those expectations, Auburn has met and or exceeded what even the most optimistic fans thought they could do.
Yeah, because to this point, some of those games in the past, even last year. There's no way we would have won some of those games. So if nothing else, this is a team with character and heart. Even when they're not playing their best, what they do, they bring a heavy load of defense and determination. And if anyone ever played any sports over any period of time, you develop that sense of no matter how bad I'm playing, we're still not going to let them outscore us. Mm-hmm. So when you have that mentality, it more often lends to victory than losses.
Yeah, this team knows how to win, and they expect to win.
Absolutely. 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 So I think we're fine. You know, yeah, there could be some hiccups every night in this league, and we are the one team that just haven't fell over and lost these unexpected games. Yeah, we'll lose to Florida, but we know what Florida is. That's not an embarrassing loss. Once I look back at it, Florida easily the second best team in this conference, if you ask me.
Sure looks that way.
Oh yeah, yeah. Hey Bill, one last thing.
Yeah.
Any update on the scoreboard? I know we got a lot going on, but.
Hey,
anything on that north end zone scoreboard?
They are working on it. I mean, if you get a chance to ride by, you can see that that there are a lot of changes and a lot of construction going on. So, yeah, I mean, that's exciting. Just the fact what they've done at Plainsman Park, and now here the work is underway there on the north end zone. I think it's great.
Wow, it's going to be an exciting season with basketball and spring practice around the corner. Wow. And this baseball team is playing great as well.
Off to a good start.
Wow. I've been watching them.
And softball. Yeah.
You know, Jeff, I will point out, I want to give a shout out here. The university has
they've got webcams.
They've got live webcams for a lot of the ongoing construction projects that you can tune into at any given time.
You sure can.
If you go to it's part of the facilities management page at the university, but they've got the camera. They've got a camera documenting the construction of the amphitheater outside the Gouge. They've got a camera documenting the north end zone video board. They've got the new student housing the ones at the quad. And there's the STEM buildings, too, the agricultural buildings that are going on. There's a bunch of construction projects, and a lot of them are being live streamed.
Yeah, you can check anytime.
To the internet with the university.
Well, I'll do it. Well, look, guys, thanks. Appreciate it. Everybody, just take it for what it is. We're good. I understand. But just understand where we're at, and we just want to be standing tall late March, early April. That's all that matters.
That's it. Appreciate it, Jeff.
Jeff, I'm giving Bill a look right now at the end zone.
That's cool with the sun setting. Yeah, that's a cool shot right now.
How would you explain? You know, the framing is built sort of in the end zone.
The frame is there for the board. Video board. All right, let's get another call before we get to our bottom of the hour break.
They've poured some concrete, it looks like, some cement to hold that, what looks like it'll be a pretty sizable video board.
It's going to be substantial. Not as big as one or the other, but there's going to be a lot more that is involved with that as well. Terry is up next. Terry from Talladega, even though he may not. He's from Talladega.
Hey, Dan, how y'all doing today?
I'm a boy from Brazil.
How you doing, buddy?
Don't live there.
Doing good. Bill heard you talk a little bit about the spring situation.
You're not one of the boys from Brazil, though, Bill.
Well, I am.
But you're not.
I was. I'm old now. No. I think my family may have actually known some of those folks.
Bill, I was asking, you were talking about the spring games earlier, schools canceling spring games. Is Auburn playing a spring game this year?
They are on April 12th. Don't know exactly what kind of format or how much you're going to see.
We know that they've got a date scheduled. Right. They've got, they're going to have fans in Jordan-Hare Stadium. How much of that will resemble a football game, and how much of that could be workouts and a fan fest and an extended scrimmage and tug of war contest or what, you know what I mean? Like it could be, could be stuff like that rather
situational
than
situational stuff.
Yeah, may not resemble American football as we know it, Terry. But they think they're going to do something to sort of to commemorate spring practice.
It's just basically a prettied up practice for the fans. So. Appreciate it, guys. You have a great day.
All right, Terry. Appreciate the call. We need to get to it.
Yeah, I think that the appetite for more grueling spring games has sort of gone away even before NIL and transfer portal considerations. You don't want to lose your starting quarterback.
No, you don't want to have guys injured and you don't know their status for the fall, or they miss all the summer even if they can come back in the fall.
And like jamborees and bringing in some other school, like bringing in a D2 school or an FCS school, that sounds great, but like – nobody wants to lose somebody important, right? You gotta find a way to navigate it through that space, and that's, you know, makes it in football, that makes it tougher. Other sports, you can play an exhibition without as grave concern for injury, right? Basketball, baseball, right. But it's a little bit tougher when you're putting on the pads and play football.
All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane from Crane & Company joins us on the other side, so stick with us for the final half hour of the Tuesday Drive.
We are back. Tuesday edition of the Drive, Dan Peck. At the controls and hosting the show, Bill Cameron had to step aside for the rest of this program. He'll be back tomorrow. No show Thursday as we step aside for women's basketball, and then we'll be back on Friday. I got Troy games the next Wednesday. I got Troy games the next couple of days, so I will be off, but Bill will be back running things. We are thrilled to welcome in our usual Tuesday guest. I had a little trouble connecting with him in the previous segment, but it was not his fault, I want to say categorically. I have people on my list to blame, but Jake is not one of them. So we are thrilled to bring in from Crane & Company our usual Tuesday guest in hour number two, and that's our good buddy Jake Crane. How you doing, pal?
Man, I'm doing great, and I will say this is the first time it's not my fault. So I'm going to put that on my mantelpiece.
Jake, you and I both often invoke the Shaggy defense and say that it wasn't us. And in this case, I can say it's absolutely true that when Jake says it wasn't me, he's speaking the truth. Jake,
you're having to be the Cam Newton of the show. So believe me, I get it. Just get us to the end zone, brother.
Hey, what else is new? All right. So Jake, here's the that part's a joke. But the Jake, it's a big night in the SEC. Let's talk a little SEC basketball in this historic year as teams go into the stretch run. I think that either if Alabama or Florida wants a share of the SEC regular season title, a loss tonight would do some critical damage.
Oh, without a doubt. And don't forget, Florida goes to Alabama still. So, you know, one of them obviously has to lose that game. So one of them will be at four losses, even if they, you know, win out beside that. And at worst, you know, if Auburn's able to handle business against Ole Miss, you're going to control your destiny, you know, and depending on what happens tonight, that could be a share of the title or to be able to win it outright even quicker. So, I mean, Dan, you know how it is. It's like this in football. It's like this in baseball. It's like this in basketball. When we get to the end of the year, the pressure on the games and the consequences of losing and then the rewards of winning only go up. So if you're an Auburn fan, tonight you're going to be rooting for Mississippi State in general playing Alabama. But Georgia beating Florida would do wonders for Auburn's ability to clinch the regular season SEC title before we get to the end of it outright.
I mean, you're clinching tomorrow night with a win if both Alabama and Florida lose tonight, which is unlikely. They're both favored, and I think that even if one were to be upset, I think it'd be pretty shocking if both Georgia and State got the job done. But I think there's before Auburn even plays Ole Miss, I think the other two contenders in the SEC, for the other two serious contenders for the regular season title, I think there are contenders in the SEC other than Alabama and Florida, but the other two serious contenders for the SEC regular season championship, they both absolutely have to take care of business tonight.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's about finding that magic number, right? And a magic number isn't just for the team and the amount of wins you have to clinch it. It's the amount of losses that you think kind of puts you over the line. And I've been saying for a couple weeks, I think it's four. The minute you get to four, you're probably out of it. You look at Alabama, they're at three. Florida, they're at three. Everybody else is already at four. So, you know, at this point, it really becomes not only – you know, if you're a team like Missouri, for instance, obviously you're mainly fighting for seeding in the NCAA tournament, and how high can you rise from a seeding standpoint when it comes to the NCAA tournament. So, you know, when you look at the rest of these games, and I tell you what, Dan, I thought last week was a huge week for bubble teams in the SEC. I mean, Arkansas getting that win over Missouri, Oklahoma getting that win at home, I think it was against Mississippi State. I may be wrong on that one. But right now, when you look at the Joe Lunardi projections, I mean, we're sitting here talking about the SEC regular season, but it is still unbelievably feasible. I think it's at 35% right now that the Southeastern Conference gets 13 teams into the NCAA tournament. And then you start looking at the rules that the committee is going to have to go through to not pit an SEC team against another SEC team until after the second round. I'm sitting here looking at it, Dan, and I'm not great at Sudokus, but I don't know how you do that if you're the committee with 13 teams in.
I think when you get to 13, the possibility, especially since you don't want to tinker too much with the seeding, you could see, I think you could see an SEC team facing each other in the round of 32, right? Do the rules prevent round of 32 interconference?
They do. So, well, I will say there is one caveat. The only way that you can play, and again, y'all can fact check me on this, please do. I want to make sure I'm right. But I believe the only way that you can face another team from your conference in the second round, not the first round, not the play-in, is if you only played once during the regular season. But if I'm a team that you could actually improve your seeding in the NCAA tournament because the committee has to avoid that, you could go from a 6-5 or a 5-4, not because you earned it, but because of the fact that you're not allowed to play another team from the SEC if you met twice during the regular season, which is a problem I've never seen, Dan, in the NCAA tournament.
Right, and that's something, I mean, I know there have been years where the Big Ten or the Big East threatened double digit.
Or the ACC, yeah. I think, got 12 in 4 or 5 years ago.
But that rule about rematches is crucial because you're only playing a handful of teams twice in a 16-team
SEC.
Well,
Dan, to that point, though, does it count if you play each other in the SEC tournament?
I don't believe so. I don't believe the SEC tournament is a regular season game. I think they could use that to, you know, we'll see what the brackets look like. I know Lenardi has routinely. All right, you know what? I think it's I think the conference tournament does count in that only playing
then
once.
That's even tougher, man.
I believe it's
a great situation for the SEC to be in, where I don't think they would deduct you a seed. I think they would only move you up a seed if that were to happen.
Right. If you've only played each other once before Selection Sunday, you are eligible to play each other in the round of 32. And I wouldn't be all that shocked. I think Lenardi's current projection has Arkansas in the play-in game, and they are in the same pod as Texas A&M, like where they would play in the round of 32 if they both advanced that far. And that's the one example that comes to mind off the top of my head. Hey, with the games tonight, do you think either Florida or Mississippi State has a better than expected chance of pulling off the upset?
Well,
Georgia or State.
Yeah, I knew what you meant. I think the obvious answer, and hey, I'll be honest with you, I think Florida's playing better than anybody in the league right now. Not that they deserve to be, an overall number one seed over Auburn when you look at the body of work, even though they did beat Auburn and Neville by a decent amount of points. But they are on the road, and Georgia has to have it, right? I mean, you heard a bunch of people talk about this with Georgia coming to Auburn, and I thought Georgia hit some shots in that game that you typically don't see him hit. If Asa Newell can shoot the three that well, they're going to have a chance. But, I mean, Florida's an absolute buzzsaw right now. And I just look at Mississippi State offensively, and I'll be honest with you, Dan. Look, I think Josh Hubbard's a good player, but I think he's the most overrated, quote-unquote, superstar in the SEC. I just think he does one thing well, and if he's not shooting well, he's not a great defender. He doesn't rebound well. I think he's 15th or 16th in assists, and he shoots more threes than anybody in the league, and he only shoots 35%. So I would probably say, if I had to, pick who do I think is more likely for the upset, it would be Georgia, because they're at home and they absolutely have to have it. You just got to feel like Bama at home with a Mississippi State team that can get in these lulls of not scoring, that's going to be a tough road to hoe. And actually, Georgia, when you look at the spread, is only a 6.5-point dog. Mississippi State's an 8.5-point dog. Obviously, one playing on the road and one playing at home has to do with that.
Condon not being available for Florida tonight plays a role, too, because, I think that Condon versus a matchup between Alex Condon and Asa Newell is, I mean, those are two NBA caliber, like top tier bigs that are squaring off. Without Condon, Florida's got to figure out a way to absorb that. Florida's still got multiple guys that everybody would want in the front court. Hauk has looked incredible. I didn't know all that much about Hauk before the Auburn game, and he has just been sensational this month in extended minutes for Florida. Handlogden's back after the Grizzly injury against Auburn last year in the SEC tournament. Chinyelu is just a steady force down low. So, like, if you told me one of the two teams got upset tonight, I'd probably also pick Florida. I think Georgia probably would be able to get it against Florida in Athens. But they so much has to break right for Georgia, even without Condon, to beat the Florida Gators.
Yeah, but I will say to Georgia's credit, I still think, look, Demery's a good player. Blue Kane, he's an exciting white that can get hot. But at the end of the day, Georgia's strength is in their front court. I mean, they got three big bodies that do different things well. If they can play even with Florida down low, and that's a lot tougher, obviously, to do than it is to say. It's going to come down to, how bad does Walter Clayton Jr. beat you on the outside? How bad does Will Richard beat you on the outside? Is Elijah Martin able to drive and finish at the rim? It's going to take a Herculean effort from Georgia. But if Georgia wins this game and you look at their non-conference and some of the things they've done in conference play, I think they're in the tournament, man. Which I tell you what, Mike White's a heck of a coach. I don't think he gets, I know at Florida it didn't go as smooth as what people thought, and a lot of people don't know his brother Danny White is the AD at Tennessee. He's a heck of a basketball coach, and nothing would shock me in the SEC this year.
Right, and Mike White has done a tough. I mean, I think it speaks to how good the league has been. That I think we perceive Mike White as having shown up at a difficult place to win, a place that hasn't had a lot of success in men's basketball over the last couple of decades, and he's done an okay job. I think they've had a really bad month, but leading into February, I mean, they were 14-4 when Auburn went there.
Dan, you know this, and everybody out there knows this, especially if you're in Lee County, Alabama, which is, basically West Georgia. The fact that Georgia does not dominate in because I'll make the argument that I think per capita, Georgia has the best high school athletes and the best high school coaching in the major three sports in the United States. How they, with the lottery, how they don't continually dominate in baseball and basketball like they do in football is shocking to me. Just look at Bruce Pearl's run at Auburn. You want to know where most of his best players have come from? It's from Georgia.
And a lot of them didn't have Georgia offers, right? You think about, your Bryce and your Jared and your Anthony McLemore and, your Georgia pieces from that 2019 Final Four team that were sort of afterthoughts even from – and I think with Georgia would tell you that for a long time they probably had the wrong people empowered in men's basketball making these decisions. I mean, the fact that it's been 25 years since Georgia's won an NCAA tournament game.
Right? That's like, wild,
right?
To me.
I mean, we're coming up on 30 years since they've. I mean, I don't think they've been to the. I don't think they've been to the second weekend since the mid 90s, right? Like, I mean, it feels impossible. Like it would be like if LSU football stunk for 30 years, right?
Like, it's like not being able to find gold in El Dorado.
Yeah, I mean it's we'll see what can happen. We'll see what happens this year for Georgia against. I'll tell you what, moving down the SEC a little bit because we've talked about Auburn, Bama, Florida, their opponents today. Is there a team further down the draw where you think they could be a sneaky or a plucky NCAA tournament team from the SEC? I think that I love the way Vanderbilt plays. I don't know if it's going to work against really good teams, but I love the way Byington gets the absolute most out of his guys. It reminds me of Bruce Pearl's first couple of teams at Auburn, to be completely honest. I mean, seeing the kid from BC who's like 6'5" and he's willing to try to out rebound 7-footers and just take the fight down. Like, I love it. And then there's Arkansas, right? Who just feels like they've gotten better, significantly over the last couple of weeks.
Well, that was going to be my answer. It's Arkansas. And you know, it's amazing when Boogie Fland, who's an NBA player, I think people forget that, but he's a volume scorer at point guard for Arkansas. When he got hurt and went out of the lineup, it seems like their roles kind of got carved out more. You saw John L. Davis. And I tell you what, Dan, you go back and look at the transfers from that FAU team that made the Final Four and what they're doing. You got Vlad Golden at Michigan, who's a legit 7-footer.
Wolf, right?
You got Elijah Martin. Yeah, you got Elijah Martin at Florida, who's an absolute dog. And then you've got John L. Davis at Arkansas, who it seems like has finally come on now when Boogie Flam went out of the lineup. I think Arkansas is kind of a scary out. Now, if we're not going to go that far down, I'm telling you right now, Missouri reminds me a little bit of 2019 Auburn.
Okay.
They really do with the way that they play. You look at Mark Mitchell, the Duke transfer down low. He gives them some front court help with Josh Gray as well.
Grill is aptly named, isn't he?
Oh, look, I mean, you talk about a guy that is just built perfectly for college basketball. But I tell you, man, he only hit three threes in the game against Alabama, where they scored 110 points. This Missouri team is really talented, and if they get hot from the outside, they are trouble, and they're going to be a really tough out in that tournament.
Love it, absolutely. I think you're on the money, Jake. Cannot wait to talk to you again. We're gonna wrap things up on the show. We had to do the last half hour had to be managed a little bit differently because we were trying to get you connected and Bill wasn't here, and I can't, you know, there's only so many things I can do at once. But tell everybody how they can find all the great work you do.
Yeah, man. Sometimes you got to let the closer throw the first two innings of the game. It just happens like that. It's easy to find us. Go to Google, it's Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N and Company. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Roku, everywhere. So, yeah, come hang out with us.
Cannot wait to have a bracket to break down with you, Jake.
I love it. Outside of football, it's the best time of year.
I'll be in Pensacola late next week for the Sun Belt Tournament, which is one of the first D1 college basketball tournaments to get going this year. And we'll have a champion crowned in 2 weeks, and then we'll be getting the SEC started. I guess the SEC tournament started a little bit after that. And 3 weeks from today, we will be eagerly. I think 3 weeks from today, we'll have a first four game. Right, like we will have.
Are you coming up to Nashville for the SEC tournament?
At the moment, I'm not planning on it, but I could be. My arm could be twisted because I will be done with. Troy will be the Sun Belt tournament will be done by then.
Well, if you do, let me know. We'll get a cold soda.
Oh man, I can't wait. Jake Crane from Crane & Company, great stuff as always.
See you, buddy.
That's going to do it for us here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. I want to say thanks to Andy Burcham for joining us at the beginning of the show. Bill Cameron hanging out all show long. He'll be back tomorrow with our usual crop of Wednesday guests talking about Auburn Ole Miss tomorrow night. We'll have a show Friday as well. Don't forget, No Drive on Thursday with Auburn Women's Basketball right here on ESPN 106.7. But that's going to do it for us here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. For Jake, for Andy, for Bill Cameron, this is Dan Peck signing off. Good night.
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.